Welcome back to Silverlight TV. This is John Papa, and Jeff Handley is my guest today.
Hi.
You are a SDE
2?
2.
Right.
Yes, lots of good acronyms coming out of here.
Yeah, software development engineer or something like that. I'm not sure what that means.
Yes, and you work on what was formerly known, the artist formerly known as Alexandria,
right.
Formerly known as...
.NET Ria Services, and now we are WCF Ria Services.
WCF Ria Services.
We are officially part of WCF now, which
right.
is great. We've built our foundation on top of WCF, and people can use the same features of WCF with Ria Services.
And you're the architect behind the...
Absolutely.
EDS.
I am... Oh, no.
Behind everything, right?
Right, behind everything, no.
It was all your idea.
I am the primary developer on the domain data source control.
Okay.
It is a declarative way to define how you're going to load data from your server into your Silverlight project and your screens. It's primarily used when you need to drive filters, sorting, paging, things like that off of other UI controls.
So the obvious question people get when, and through the years we've had these issues, and you and I have had conversations about, we've got a data control. Some people
right.
immediately go, oh, I've had experience with that. It's bad. It's poor.
Sure.
That's not the case anymore.
It isn't. You know, I won't lie. The domain data source isn't for everybody. But there's a vast majority of customers that this is going to solve a lot of problems for. There's a lot of plumbing involved in taking input out of the UI controls and loading your data from that. There are a lot of repetitive things that you need to do to make that happen. And domain
right.
data source can be a great feature for a lot of people.
And it ties right into all the features that you do in Ria Services, WCF Ria Services.
Right, it does.
For you.
And the nice thing with the domain data source and Ria Services is that you, even though it's a UI control that's mm-hmm. invoking loads, you still have your domain client and your domain context as well as your domain service between your screen and your data access layer.
Right.
So there are several layers where you can still take control. And you don't have to use it inside the UI, but I think a lot of our customers will.
I think when you and I were talking about this originally through Twitter, I think it was,
one right.
of the first conversations, I was giving my very poignant feedback
sure.
on some features. I think where you sold me on it was when you started showing me that you don't have to stick with what the DDS does for you. You can actually code around these things.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't lock you in a box, which is where my complaints were with previous data controls and other technologies.
Right.
It got you 80% of the way there, and then you were left on a cliff hanging off the edge.
Right.
The DDS doesn't do that to you, though, right?
Not as much, no.
Good, good.
So, and the other thing that, you know, so you mentioned we talked about it on Twitter. One of the things I want to talk about today is mm-hmm. What I'm calling community-driven design. And it's something that Brad Abrams has really helped with. When I joined the team, I wanted to be open with the community and wanted to talk about the features and, mm-hmm. and hear early feedback on the domain data source control and help customers design the features for us and so that when we do release that it meets people's expectations.
Great, and you're using Twitter poll?
Yeah, so I use TwitPoll. So you can see some of the things I've thrown out here. I've talked recently about getting source code out and different features, including how you eat popcorn. one thing, like autoload, should it be true or false? That's something that was great. I asked the community, should this Boolean property be true or false? We got 32 responses, 16 were true, 16 were false. We left it as is. It is true by default.
And autoload means that it's automatically going to load all the data in the data source and populate the screen.
Right. As soon as the screen loads, it will automatically hit the database. I also use my blog pretty extensively to talk about the features I'm working on mm-hmm. and ask for feedback. One thing in particular, was the domain data source view was a class we created. And I asked for feedback on what the API for that class should be and collected feedback. And then we designed the class. And then I put the API out there on my blog, long before it was released.
Oh, great.
So,
and I will take all these links and put them up on the Silverlight TV website so people can have these?
Absolutely.
Great.
And we also had, there's one particular feature that I put out here, defining its limits for the domain data source. We had a series of bugs dealing with how editing and paging interact. If you have changes on your data, what should happen if you move pages and move back and do all these other loads? And I asked the community, here are all the details for this particular feature. How would you want the control to react in these situations?
Right.
And I actually heard overwhelming feedback of, just cut the feature. And it was great because I was able to cut that feature and then spend a lot more time on other features.
Some features that matter more to people.
Absolutely.
Now, this is done, I see in the post, July of last year. So
right.
you've been developing this for a while.
Yeah, we have. I've been on the Ria Services team for almost 2 years, and I've spent the vast majority of that time working on this feature.
Oh, great, great. Okay, so what have you got to show us today?
So I do want to show some of the behaviors that are changing in the domain data source from what people saw at PDC to our next release. We have had some minor breaking changes, some of which are taking that community feedback and driving it into the product.
So when I say breaking changes, that what came out at PDC, that was a beta?
Yes. It was for the Visual Studio 2010, it was a preview. And then for 2008, it was a beta.
So they're breaking changes not when in full release and released code, it's breaking changes with
right.
previews.
That's a very good point. Let me see if I can zoom this down a little bit here to fit a little better on the projector. There we go. This is an application that we showed at PDC. It was featured in the keynote. Scott Hansman showed it. And I've built a couple of extra things on top of here and want to show how people that have used query parameters and filter descriptors and things like that, mm-hmm. how that's going to be changing in the next release. Very minor changes, but things I did want people to be aware of and show, again, how we've had been able to take the feedback from customers and drive it right into the product. So the scenario is pretty simple. We have a couple of list boxes here of stores and contacts within those stores, and then we can edit the contacts at each of the stores. We have server-side paging implemented in here. I actually have a sleep in the demand service to slow that down, trying to show show when things are loading.
So you're pretending that it's going over a slow connection.
Right.
Okay.
One of the things we heard, overwhelming feedback from PDC, was that we were previously blocking any loads whenever a pending load was ongoing. So you can see I've got this little loading down here. With our PDC release, if you were to try to invoke a second load while that load was ongoing, mm-hmm. you would have actually gotten load error saying you can't invoke another load while one is pending.
Really?
Yes, and we heard a lot of feedback from people saying, no, that doesn't work. You know, I want it just to cancel the pending load and start a new load. So we've done that, and that works both with the auto load scenario and the programmatic scenario of calling the load method.
These are all asynchronous loads still using the same model.
Exactly.
Right.
So that's one behavior difference that people overwhelmingly asked for us to change, and we went ahead and put that in. You'll see that in our next release.
Good.
So the another thing that surfaced actually out of this demo when I was showing it to some people is that if you were on something other than the first page and you changed some data and you saved it, with our PDC release, it would save the data and then take you back to the first page. And of course, people wrote back and said, "Hey, don't do that."
That's frustrating.
I want to stay on that page. So we've changed that behavior as well. So
now it brings you to the last page.
It keeps you wherever you are. And we were actually refreshing all the data, thinking, mm-hmm. "Okay, well, you just submitted some changes. You probably want to reload the data." And, mm-hmm. and sort of a byproduct of that was that you got sent back to the first page. And what we do now is we still refresh whatever entities were submitted, whatever was changed. So if there was a database trigger or something like that, those entities will still reflect that. But otherwise, you stay exactly where you were with the current item.
Okay, so if you had 100 records there and you changed two of them, for example, those two will be refreshed and you'll stay on the same page.
Exactly.
Whereas previously, you'd get all 100 records.
Right.
Which, that's a big difference, too.
It is. So I also want to show some of the code changes to the demand data source that we had. I went ahead and put a search box up here, and I've got a sort by. I think this is a pretty common scenario of having a screen, not necessarily click on grid headers to sort, but mm-hmm. have a drop-down like this of how you want to sort. You'll see this a lot on shopping sites, sort by price, high to low, price, low to high, relevance, et cetera. That was something that was actually pretty difficult to pull off with the demand data source with our PDC release, and that's something we strive to simplify.
So specifically, you've got ways to do sorting that's not connected to the data grid or whatever control you're in.
Correct.
Okay.
And you could have done that before, but you were going to have to write code. You'd have to handle the events from that mm-hmm. drop down and, encode, modify the sort descriptors behind the demand
source. So now I assume you're binding that control, the sorting control, through the DDS, through element binding?
So that's actually some of what we've been able to do. I mentioned we were able to save a lot of time cutting that other feature, and we were able to use a lot of that time getting rid of our control parameter class, finally.
Oh, great.
That's something that everybody had always agreed was a hack, including myself. And it was implemented long before we had element binding. And now we've been able to utilize element binding on a lot of our controls. So just kind of show what some of this code would have looked like before. If we would have a query parameter. Oops, of course. The code for that, that's right. We would have a query parameters collection with a control parameter. You'd have to say what parameter name, what control name, what property name, what refresh event. And it was kind of clumsy.
Right.
What we've changed that to now is this code here, where you now just specify a parameter, and you give it the parameter name of keyword, and then its value is just an element binding.
And the store filter is that drop-down box?
The store filter was the text box.
The text box, yeah.
So actually in this scenario, we would say search stores and drive that parameter off of that. So we'll go ahead and run that real quick. Actually, I probably need to let that load up fresh here.
Okay.
So then we type that in, and boom, it loads up everything where either the store name, the city, or the state contained Ohio.
And you didn't have to press enter or anything?
No. And we are in auto-load mode at this point.
It's also because we're using binding
to
do this.
Right. So that's where bindings, you know, element bindings come in for query parameters. And the same is true for filters. And there are some other changes that we had with filters as well. If you wanted to do this with filters instead of with query parameters, previously you would have to specify inside your filter descriptors property for the demanded source a filter descriptor collection with a logical operator, and for each filter descriptor a control parameter that pointed to it. So you can see this is where I'm doing, you know, either the store name or the city name or the state province.
I think we call that XAML bloat.
Yes, we call that XAML bloat. So with the element binding and with a couple other changes, we're able to get rid of that filter descriptor collection. So the code you have now is just to define the filter descriptors directly inside filter descriptors.
Mm-hmm.
And you specify the property path, the operator, and then the value is just an element binding.
Okay, so we're using bindings again.
Right.
Element binding comes
saves
the day.
Now it's a lot more, you know, consistent with what you're going to see elsewhere.
That's also more intuitive in a lot of ways.
And it also fixed a bunch of bugs for us because control parameter had bugs that we kept putting off because we knew one day we'd delete that class.
Wait a minute. You told me once you never write any bugs.
No, I inherited them.
Oh, okay. Just clear the air right now.
Right. So one thing I do want to point out here real quick is that we had that logical operator before was on the filter descriptor collection. Since we wanted to make that collection just a read-only and it's automatically created for you, we did have to move that property up onto the demanded source itself, filter operator there. So we're going to change this back to get stores, and we've got rid of the query parameters there.
Okay, so you have to move that up there.
Laptop keyboards, always fun. Right. So yeah, now we specify that filter operator up there, and we have the filter descriptors all tied here. If we run this, we should see the same result. Now we're doing the filter through essentially link, as opposed to through a parameter on the domain service method. We see the same results. So load up Ohio, anything that has Ohio in the store name, city, or state.
Are there any other stores besides Ohio? Just curious.
Yes, there are. So the binding support actually ripples through a few other things as well. I mentioned the sorting. This is where we can pull off the sorting off that combo box.
And this is new as well, right?
This is a new capability. It's something that would have been difficult to do before. But now what I ended up creating was this combo box, and I've got this sort property direction class that has a property path, a sort direction, and text.
And that's your own class.
That's just
my
own little class.
That's not part of the services.
Yeah. We were talking about maybe trying to get it in a toolkit or something, because I think this might be useful for a lot of cases.
Sure.
But pretty straightforward POCO class that just has those properties. And then what we can do is on that sort descriptor, we can just say a single sort descriptor with a property path bound to the property path, and then the direction bound to the direction off of the selected item on that.
Right. So your store sort is your combo box, your selected item is what they're selecting, and then because it's bound to your specific class, you can use the property path.
Exactly. Works out really well. So now, once this loads up, I can say sort by number of contacts, which is, you know, store contacts.count. So it's a calculated property off of, you know, the entity. You know,
great.
Off
great.
The hierarchy. So that works out really well. And the last thing I want to show is that we were able to build in iCommand support. And it's something that Silverlight 4 added additional iCommand support, and Demand Data Source was able to jump on top of that. And down here we've got a couple of buttons. It used to be if you wanted to cancel your changes or save your changes or do a load, you'd have to dive into the code behind and call a method.
Right.
We now have reject changes command, submit changes command, and of course a load command on the domain data source.
So those commands, the load changes, reject changes, and submit changes, are all commands that are built into the DDS?
Correct.
Okay.
They're right on the domain data source control, so now you can just have buttons that are bound to those commands, and we have full can execute support. So as you saw in the demo, the buttons were disabled until you had changes, and then they automatically become enabled. So this is, you know, again, how we were able to take some of the time we saved by cutting that other feature and
right.
really improve our Silverlight 4 support.
Well, that's great. That's great. This is all fantastic stuff, and what I really hearing from you, the way I'm interpreting this, is a lot of these features are come out of the community requests through Twitter, blog posts, coffee shop chats that you and I have had, or other people.
Right.
So if you've got any opinions out there in the Twitterverse or in the blog sphere, you know, let Jeff know.
Right. On Twitter, I'm Jeff Handley, and I'm jeffhandley.com, so I'm pretty easy to find.
I'm also Jeff Handley. No. So this is great stuff. We'll put all these links up there. If you've got some sample code that we could put out there as well,
absolutely,
that would be great. And I know that you're very active out there in the community on Twitter taking requests, and we all appreciate that. So thank you for coming on, Jeff. And
thanks for having me.
Thank you guys for watching us at Silverlight TV on Twitter. Okay.